If you think about British English, what do you think of? Is it something like this?
Now, the trick to making a truly perfect cup of tea is to coax out the tea's natural essence and subtle flavours by ever so gently vocalising your desire. You want to make the tea feel comfortable at this point, so, help the tea let its hair down, let it relax, let it steep in your passion. That's it, darling. Take your time.
Or is it something more like this?
Yeah, because I prefer it being a band, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So now I'm on your jacks a little bit. It's a bit more better when you're with the lads. Even though the lads are there and that.
Yeah. Well,
see, now I've got to do all this chatting, haven't I?
You know? Yes, you see, that's
there's no way to send all my know, you know what I mean? He's with all this kind of thing, you know what I mean? So
those are In Order actor Benedict Cumberbatch talking about that very British institution of tea, then English singer and songwriter Liam Gallagher, who hails from Manchester. Some pretty big differences there. Now, how about the differences between American English and British English? Our next guest is an American linguist who works in England. She's noticed a lot of differences, big and small, that sometimes lead to confusion. Lynn Murphy is a professor of linguistics at the University of Sussex and the author of the new book, The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. She's also the author of the award-winning blog, Separated by a Common Language. Lynn, welcome to Central Time.
No problem. I'm happy to be here.
How long have people in England, in particular, I guess, worried that we here in the United States are ruining the English language?
Well, probably almost since the beginning of America. There were people in the 18th century, in the 1700s, complaining about American words and American accents. But it's really been since the late 19th century that people are worried about American English ruining British English.
Yeah, they're worried about loan words and Americanisms coming over. You say people are writing about this all the time.
Yeah, I mean, the letters to the editor of any newspaper, you know, it comes up again and again.
And there's this sense, and I think this is probably true on both sides of the ocean, this sense that, okay, over there on the islands, that's the original language, timeless and enduring. And over here in America, we've split off from it and innovated. You write, that's really not true.
That's not really true, no. I mean, English changes all the time, no matter where it is. And in England, it's changed a lot in the last few hundred years, even a lot in the last century. So, the idea that American is somehow the one that changes, and in Britain it stays the same, that's just not true.
A lot of people try to compare and contrast common words and phrases in both languages. One of the things I loved in your book is usually when you see a news article or a tourist guide or whatever that lists a bunch of things like, oh, here's what Americans call this, here's what British people call this, usually about a third of them are just plain wrong.
Yeah, a lot of them are wrong, and a lot of them just miss the subtleties, you know, because, you know, if you do something like a truck is a lorry, well, not everything that's called a truck is called a lorry. A pickup truck isn't a lorry. A UPS truck wouldn't be a lorry. It would be a van. So, you know, there are all sorts of subtleties that get missed in such translations.
Well, as an American linguist living in England, what were some of the first things that struck you as real differences that could maybe even create confusion?
Well, you know, because I work in education, there was just a lot of jargon for education that I had to learn. When my students say that they're coming to my lessons, it makes me feel like a piano teacher rather than a professor, you know? So there are all sorts of little things like that. But the funny thing is, I've been there for 18 years. There's not a week that goes by that I don't learn something new that I didn't know before about British English or even about American English, because you don't realize until somebody doesn't understand you which things are your dialect.
And one thing that's got to make it harder is they're both sides of the language. They're moving targets, right? It's not like they're fixed in place and forever.
Absolutely.
They're changing. So I'm learning new words in American English all the time.
Yeah, I mean, they're not fixed in time. And also, there's so much variety within either country. So, you know, you go to a different part of the country and you learn a new set of words or a new set of expressions.
And you write that you've encountered this and seen it written. A lot of times British people will be pleasantly surprised at how articulate an American is when they talk.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are two stereotypes that go on, either that, you know, Americans are not very well educated, or that we are really, really good at public speaking. and you get both of those stereotypes sort of living side by side. And I think part of that is that Americans have been taught to be confident in their own voice and to, you know, be encouraged to have their own opinions on things. And so we do that well.
Let's look at some of the words that are different. I was just reading the bit about the word quite. Oh, it's quite cold outside, or however you want to use it.
Mm-hmm.
It can mean exactly the opposite, or almost exactly the opposite thing. Talk about that.
Yeah, it's really tricky in British English because sometimes quite means somewhat. So if you say you're quite happy about something, you're not very happy about it. But if, you know, something was quite dead, you know, the phone line is quite dead, you know, that would still mean very in that case. So there are all sorts of ways that quite is used in British English that don't really translate well into American English.
So if I said our conversation is quite interesting...
Oh, that would be the kiss of death.
Right. And I mean, oh, it was really very interesting.
Yeah.
But in England, you're like, oh, so you're thinking it was almost boring.
Yes, exactly.
And have you run into trouble with that one?
Not knowingly. That's the problem. When you miscommunicate, you often don't know that you've left a bad impression.
So they might come away saying, Lynn thought I was quite boring.
Yeah. That Lynn, she's not very nice, is she?
Or quite nice, maybe. A little bit, but not completely. And yeah, even in surveys, the options might be very, not at all, and then in between them, quite, which would be baffling to me. Isn't that the same thing?
Yeah, so my local campaigner for a member of parliament seat gave me such a survey, and with, you know, am I quite happy, very happy, or not happy at all with local services. And yeah, I mean, how do you answer as an American to a question like that?
We're talking to Lynn Murphy. Her new book is The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. What are some other words that you've encountered that might create confusion that aren't, you know, the stereotypical ones that we might think we know?
Well, I think one thing I found out a couple of years ago was that when I say frown, I mean smiling with my, or the opposite of smiling.
Mm.
And when a lot of people around me said frown, they didn't mean a mouth movement. They meant an eyebrow movement. And that's something that has changed in America during, you know, some people's lifetime. So there are probably still people in America who use frown to mean an eyebrow movement. But, you know, for a lot of us, frown is the sad face emoji, right? And so, you know, you just don't know sometimes whether you're not communicating with people.
And getting back to how we compare and contrast, you say in the States we suffer from American verbal inferiority complex. What is that?
Sometimes, yeah. So it's the feeling that if you're talking to a British person, they must be the better speaker. They must know English better than you do. If they say something, it must be the more beautiful way of saying something, which, you know, not every American suffers from, but, you know, there are quite a few who do.
And often I assume that the assumption, that's kind of redundant maybe, but that we think, oh, British people sound smarter, more sophisticated, more elegant. But you point to some surveys saying that, hey, maybe Americans don't feel that way.
Yeah, I mean, some surveys 40 years ago said Americans think British people sound more intelligent. But when you dig down in that, it's not actually intelligence. It's they sound more educated or they sound more upper class. But in America, educated isn't always the same as intelligent. You know, we value street smarts in a certain way. So basically, when you look at British accents and how Americans stereotype them, very often the stereotypes are a little bit negative. So they sound pretentious or snooty.
There are different accents, of course, within the United States and within Great Britain. It seems like there's kind of a class connection to the appropriate, proper way to talk, probably on both sides, but particularly in Britain. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. I mean, of course, we've got in America ways that you think of as being more or less educated ways of talking, or maybe urban or rural ways of talking. Those are big ways that we stereotype accents here. But in Britain, it really is all about class and whether you have a posh accent or a middle-class accent or which middle-class accent you have. This often gets tied up with regional accents. So the higher-class accents sound more southeastern. And so people in certain classes, even up north, will sound more like southeastern people than they sound like other northern people because they're getting the accent that goes with their class.
If somebody was going to try to do a stereotypical English accent here, there'd probably be, you know, Cheerios and Lorries and Bobbies and things like that.
Yeah.
When people there are maybe impersonating or talking like they think an American talks, like, how does it sound?
It sounds like a Valley Girl. Or else,
oh, really?
Valley Girls and rappers is what it sounds like. Occasionally, you'll hear people do something more twangy as an American accent, but in general, they go for a very stereotypical Californian sort of sound.
That's funny. What pops into my head, and this is dated a bit, was Monty Python episodes in the 70s where if they were doing, these are English people, if they're doing American accents, they're just sort of shouting and a pinched shouting voice, and that's what an American sounded like, maybe in 1970s England.
Well, I think if you talk to people of a certain age, they'd certainly have that kind of stereotype that Americans sound like business people and we're always trying to, you know, make deals.
Another thing that, getting back to the worry about Americanisms, is the idea that Americans are creating new words that aren't really right to be used. And this goes back a long way. You talk about, I think it was Thomas Jefferson creating the word that I would take for granted now, belittle something.
Yep, exactly. I mean, when Thomas Jefferson first used belittle, he actually meant it literally, to make something smaller. And now it's grown a more figurative meaning where we mean to make it less important. And British people use that word now, too, and don't realize that it came over from America. But when he first used that word, you know, the magazines and the literary magazines in Britain were up in arms about it.
Are there new trends that you're noticing in how British English and American English compare and contrast?
Well, I don't know if I have trends in how they compare and contrast. The accents are going in different directions. You can say that for sure. So a lot of people in Britain in particular worry about, you know, we'll all speak the same English soon. We won't. We share a lot more vocabulary than we have in the past because we have so much more contact with other people through the internet, through international media. But, you know, on the other hand, the way people talk at home tends to still stay rather different and moves in different directions.
And Lynn, if we were both English in this modern era, we probably wouldn't sign off our conversation by saying cheerio, would we?
No, we probably wouldn't unless we were about 90 years old.
Well, Lynn, I'll say thanks a lot. It's been fun.
Thank you. It's been a good time.
Lynn Murphy is professor of linguistics at the University of Sussex in England. She joined us to talk about her new book, The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. You can learn more at her blog. It's called Separated by a Common Language.